Now, one important part of neoadjuvant therapy that frequently doesn't get discussed, and this is it's clear in the presentation, the New England Journal paper on this preoperative, postoperative trial, is that we still don't have the best techniques for determining the TNM stage before we do neoadjuvant therapy. The benefit of postoperative therapy is assuming someone had good surgery, which we'll get back to, and has good pathology quality control, you know whether the patient needs treatment or not. When you do preoperative staging, you have to have a multimodal team where not only is the surgeon someone, you're in a high volume center with a high volume surgeon who does a proper TME procedure, which means you get good circumferential margins and lots of nodes. But the other aspect of it is that you have good diagnosticians. Now, whether you do, the British tend to use MRI more often. We tend to use endoscopic ultrasound. They've never been directly compared, but in truth, the accuracy of EUS for T stage is about 80%, with more likelihood of overstaging, and end stage is somewhere between 60 and 80% with a higher likelihood of understaging.
Is that from the German START trial, or do we have that data from the United States?
We have lots of data from lots of institutions looking at this, where they've done the EUS, then they do surgery and they compare directly. So there tend to be more people clinically staged as T3s that turn out to be pathologic T2s. And then you have a mixed group of patients where the nodes look negative based on size, but they're microscopically positive. And the reverse can be true. If someone has had four biopsies trying to get to the definitive treatment, you may have enlarged lymph nodes simply based on inflammation.
I mean, I can understand the nodal thing easily, but in terms of the tumor, how do you explain that?
Probably because there's inflammatory pushing,
right,
so that it pushes out, but it's not tumor.
Right.
So maybe we need micro-EUS, but the truth is that if you look at the German trial, where everybody was staged equally across the board, and half of the people went immediately to surgery and half got radiation and chemotherapy,
sure,
20% of people at surgery were stage one. That means, although we always over-treat by definition in an adjuvant trial, in this case, radiation therapy is sometimes a gift that keeps on giving. Most chemotherapy toxicities disappear, but radiation is substantial in its toxicity, and you have to be very selective in how you give it. So I think you have to tell patients that there's a 1 in 5 chance that you will get preoperative therapy and you will not have needed it. Now, if you are doing the treatment because of sphincter preservation, all bets are off, because here in the German trial, only half of the people that were thought to need colostomies and did get them in the postoperative arm needed them and got them in the preoperative treatment arm. So there's a clear benefit in terms of downstaging. But if someone has, for example, an EUS staged high T3, clearly node negative tumor, I think twice about doing preoperative therapy in that patient. It's not an issue of sphincter preservation, although the toxicity, if they ultimately need radiation and chemotherapy, might be somewhat higher with post-op than pre-op, which was shown. The truth is that the balancing of that is that for a high T3N0 patient who had good surgery and 28 negative nodes, there is absolutely no role for radiation in that patient. And almost every grad radiation oncologist I know would agree. That patient should be treated like a colon cancer patient, and you enter the same discussion you would as if they were a stage 2 colon. And I think sparing people treatments as we evolve and individualizing them is a very important aspect. And the best paper on this is Len Gunderson's paper that's in JCO about 2 years ago, where he clearly looks at TN staging and separates patients not into the classic stage 2, stage 3, all 2s and 3s need chemo radiation, but looks at the independent risk of local failure for various T and N stages independently, and then provides a low risk, intermediate risk, and high risk population. The intermediate risk are those, for example, with clear T3 node-positive grouping, in the node-positive grouping, where perhaps chemoradiation therapy should remain the standard. The low-risk patients, especially for low risk of local failure, maybe they should not all be getting radiation therapy. Maybe 5-FU alone would be enough, or capecitabine. And at the other end are the high-risk patients, where clearly what we're doing, even with standard chemoradiation, even with oxaliplatin, may not be enough. And I think it's true that when we quote results of protocol data to a patient, you're only accurate in giving those data if the patient were to have been eligible for the trial from which the data came, because ultimately many patients are not. And so there's always going to be a drop-off because of ineligibilities and comorbidities. But I think in rectal cancer, a lot of it also has to do with the issue, which has been shown, is that patients who are operated on in high-volume hospitals by high-volume surgeons who are likely to do TME-like procedures with good pathology have better outcomes. In fact, their survival is increased much more than oxaliplatin will ever increase it, or cetuximab. So I think it's important that patients understand that there is some connection between the quality of the treatment. It's not just the treatment alone, but the quality of who administers the treatment. And rectal, pancreas, esophageal, it's been shown over and over again in these disease sites that the more the better.